Pain is a disease. Let's treat the pain. We wouldn't leave another disease untreated, especially if it impacts the quality of life the way that pain does.
All tripods experience pain before, during, and after surgery. But how do you know? And what treatments are best? Learn how to talk with your vet about pain with Dr. Tamara Grubb on this episode of Tripod Talk Radio.
And scratching like a three-legged dog.
For any tripod, cat or dog.
Why do some vets do things that way? Why?
So many people don't realize that their dogs are in pain.
He's a three-legged dog and he's still pretty good.
Hello again from Jim and Renee at Tripods. You're listening to Tripod Talk Radio, episode number 123. And today, we're talking all about pain management for amputee pets. Controlling pain after amputation surgery is a complicated challenge, and every case is different. When faced with bone cancer or traumatic injury, dogs and cats have pain before surgery, during recovery, and after they've healed. But they're also very good at hiding their pain. Oftentimes, it feels like a roller coaster watching your pet recover. There are many different pain medications and treatments available. Not all pain is the same, nor are all pain meds alike. And not all vets practice the most current pain management standards. That's why we're excited to share our chat with Dr. Tamara Grubb. Dr. Grubb is current president of the International Veterinary Academy of Pain Management. She is a diplomat of the American College of Veterinary Anesthesia and Analgesia. She's an international pain management educator and lecturer, as well as a certified veterinary acupuncturist with many more credentials. So, if you have questions about your pet's pain or how to talk about it with your vet, keep listening. From acute pain and chronic to NSAIDs and opioids, from acupuncture and rehab to common pain signals and side effects, we cover it all. Dr. Grubb, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. This is a topic that's very important to me.
And to everybody in our community. Hi, Dr. Grubb. This is Renee, and I am so excited to have you because several months ago, I saw you on a fear-free webinar and thought, we need to have her on our podcast because you are so good at explaining things in a way that pet parents like us can understand. And today's topic is it can get really complicated and overwhelming, especially when somebody is in the middle of dealing with amputation recovery or some type of injury with their three-legged dog or cat. So I know that you're going to do a great job informing us about this important topic. So thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. And that's such a huge compliment because that really is my goal, is for everybody to understand how bad pain is, how to look for pain, and what we should be doing for our pets to control that pain.
So maybe we can start right there, like prior to surgery, prior to any diagnosis. One thing I have a problem with is like how to identify pain. A lot of people don't know what indicators suggest that their dogs might be in pain.
Oh, you're definitely not alone there. There are so many pets in pain that need to come see a veterinarian. But if the pet parent doesn't recognize pain, then they don't get in for treatment of pain. And it's a very common problem, and I totally understand it, because if you've never had a pet in pain, you don't know what to look for. And you think maybe it's like humans. We talk about our pain, right? If I were in pain right now, I would tell you all about it. And animals don't do that. And we do it because in our social structure, if I'm telling you about my pain, you might help me. You might send me to a good pain doctor or recommend a person who does acupuncture or something. But our dogs and cats don't come from that social world. They come from hiding pain for survival, because if they show pain and they look weak, then a predator might eat them. Okay, none of our house pets have predators inside our house. But that's a very strong evolutionary instinct. It's not going to go away. So we have to look at them and say, what would pain look like then? Because we don't see pain. We see the impact of pain. What is pain doing to our pet? And that's manifest primarily in two ways. And one is kind of obvious: change in mobility, if we're talking about musculoskeletal pain. So a lot of the tripods have that. But it also looks like a change in behavior. And behavior doesn't just mean I've got a really outgoing cat. That's his behavior. Behavior also encompasses daily habits like grooming and urination, defecation. So if the pet is less interactive, okay, that's a big behavior change. If it used to be really friendly, or maybe it's starting to hide and it never used to hide, or maybe it's not grooming as well, or maybe the dog's not asking to go outside to urinate or defecate anymore, or the cat is urinating outside the litter box and it didn't used to do that. So when we see behavior changes, we need to think problem. It may not be pain. Maybe it's a disease. Maybe it's because we got a new puppy and the cat doesn't like it, but that's still a problem that a veterinarian can help with. How do we integrate the puppy and the cat? But it's often pain. And so getting all of us as pet parents to remember that, we see the impact of pain. Is my pet doing something different behaviorally? And that then really should instigate a visit to the veterinarian. Because again, maybe it's not pain, but it's some problem. And a lot of times it's pain. So looking for changes in behavior and changes in mobility, that's what pain looks like.
Oh, I would like to throw this one out there as far as looking for pain, because what do you think about tail wagging and appetite? So a lot of people base their animal's comfort level on, is their tail wagging? Are they eating? What about those two things in relation to pain and what it looks like?
You have hit a huge nail on the head. I'm so glad you asked that question. Absolutely. I hear it every day. No, doc, my pet is not in pain because he's still eating. No, doc, not in pain because his tail is wagging. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's, I hate to say you might be wrong, not you, but the person that says that, but you might.
Sure.
Be wrong. And you know, tail wagging, it's just a sign that says, I'm happy to see you. And it doesn't really have anything to do with the physiologic status of that pet at that moment, right? Just like, oh, hey, there you are. Good. So it has no indication of pain or not pain. And then eating, oh my goodness, they eat for survival, just like they hide pain for survival. And so not eating means something. If they stop eating, that means a lot. If they are still eating, that means nothing to do with pain. Absolutely nothing. And just think about it. I mean, we're talking about tripods today, but just think about how bad dental disease can be in some pets if the pet parent isn't watching for that. Their mouths can be awful, their teeth rotting out. That's obviously painful, and yet they're still eating, right? And the pain's right there where they're eating. So yeah, I'm really glad you asked that. And it's a big point for everyone. Tail wagging, I love it, but it doesn't mean anything about pain. And eating, again, nothing about pain. Unless they
thank
stop.
You for clarifying. Unless they stop. Yeah. And thank you for yeah. So a lot of people, when they do see the obvious pain signals that have been pointed out by you, by their vet, usually in our community, that's accompanied by a diagnosis that calls for amputation of an affected limb. And we're thrown into this world where, oh my gosh, we have to make these major medical decisions for our animal. In our case, Jim and I, we never had to do that before our dog was diagnosed with osteosarcoma. So not only did we have to learn a whole new language in the veterinary world, but we're also looking out for our dog's comfort both before surgery, after surgery, and then later in life. And one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you today was to cover pain management before, during, and after amputation recovery. And the big question I have right now in my mind is, are there things that we can do before amputation surgery to make sure our pets have a comfortable recovery later on? Is there a medication they can be given before surgery? What should we be talking to with our vet about making sure they go through this as comfortably as possible?
You hit on a bunch of really good things right there. So first of all, the pain management protocol from the vet, so that before, during, and after, is perfect, because some Most veterinarians don't do it like this, but there's still a few probably that give the pain meds before the surgery starts. So maybe an opioid and an anti-inflammatory drug, and then that's the pain management. And it can't be that way. This really requires a robust protocol. So, like you said, before, during, after. So we start that way. Yes, that's awesome. But then during, we want to do some local blocks and maybe a drip of pain management, an infusion of pain management. And then after, absolutely readdressing pain, stop giving more drugs. So that before, during, after is huge. It has to be this robust protocol. And then what if we back it out even a little bit more? So what could we do the week before or the days before? If there's any underlying pain that we could treat, of course, like you said, they're usually already in pain, so they're on analgesics. And that's important to try to control the pain the best that we can. And if it's not controllable, to get that surgery done as soon as we can. So we want them on some analgesic drugs before the surgery. And if they're not in a lot of pain, we could start, a week before even, but we don't always have that luxury. And then also thinking about their anxiety level, this gets left out a lot. And anxiety exacerbates pain. So if they are also a very anxious type pet, then we should have them on some anxiolytics ahead of time, like gabapentin, and try to get them kind of in a calmer place before the surgery.
Really interesting, because we have noticed a lot more pets getting prescribed trazodone generally after surgery, which we'll talk about in a bit. But as far as the analgesics go, what should we be asking for?
What you should be asking for is, what is your comprehensive analgesic protocol? And I'm going to throw the word multimodal out there because it's sort of my favorite word, and all it means is more than one mode. And like we just discussed, we want to have a veterinarian or the veterinary technician maybe talking to us about pain management that says what you and I just said. This is what we do before, during, and after the procedure. And these are some of the drugs that we're going to use: an opioid and an anti-inflammatory, a local anesthetic, maybe ketamine, right? All of the different drugs that would go into that protocol. And we want it to be all-encompassing. And that's the biggest descriptor of it. Balanced, all-encompassing, multimodal. We want to hear that things are being done at different times in the surgery, and that different drugs are being used because they work at different places in that pain pathway or that pain system. And then we also want to hear from our veterinarian or veterinary technician that plan for recovery. And I don't mean anesthesia recovery, that's obvious, but recovery from the surgery. We don't want to get dumped, right? We want that continued support. Like, what treatments are we going to be using, and how can we assess them? And I said treatments on purpose because a lot of times it's not drugs. It could be an NSAID plus acupuncture. I'm also certified in acupuncture, so a big believer in that. And of course, there's laser and physiotherapy. It's going to have to include a lot. We want that veterinarian to tell us a lot of stuff that they are planning for us or our pet.
I like that word treatment too, because that is something that I tend to forget to mention to people that, aside from a medication such as, gabapentin, yeah, there's a lot that can be done for their comfort. What we're seeing right now in the community is generally right before surgery, a dog or a cat might get gabapentin and an NSAID. And they may come home with that. But in countries where maybe the pain medications that we receive here in the US and Canada aren't widely used, what is something that somebody could ask for? I mean, is tramadol completely ineffective? Are there other coding things like names of drugs that people could talk to with their vet, talk to about?
Yeah, absolutely. There are some. And I'm going to say it's kind of disappointing because we don't have a lot of choices in veterinary medicine, which is no excuse for not trying something, but we don't have the choices, all the choices that we would like to have that we need. And the most potent drug classes that should be included in the surgical pain, in the surgical protocol for pain, are the opioids and the anti-inflammatory drugs and the local anesthetics. Those are huge. You want to hear your veterinarian say that they do local anesthetic blocks. If any of those drugs are missing, and it's usually opioids, because you're right, not every country has access to opioids. Now we can't just say, okay, well, we don't have opioids, so we're not going to, we'll just go without. We need to hear that vet say, we are going to add in some gabapentin, not as potent as an opioid, but still we're trying to add in other things. We do acupuncture. We want to hear that. A lot of countries where opioids aren't available, that seems like there might be some more use of physical medicine. And tramadol is not completely off the table. So gabapentin, yes, is one we know that might help. It's not that great for the surgical pain itself, but it's for that ongoing pain that was already there. Because I want to make a quick point. If a patient is already in pain, so the reason for the amputation, whatever the painful lesion was, and we cause more pain by doing surgery, those patients have really amplified pain because it's pain on pain. And so the gabapentin really is for the pre-existing pain. And then again, maybe an anxiolytic. There's a drug called amantadine. So it works in the spinal cord like ketamine does. And I like to use ketamine drips during the surgery for all of the amputations, anything with pre-existing pain, not something I would send home, obviously, but something in the clinic. So amantadine is an option. Tramadol might help some dogs. It's not as good as we thought it was, as we all know now, but it does work. As it's not a very good opioid in dogs. It is in cats. It's a very good opioid in cats, but it makes cats very dysphoric. And cats hate the taste. But it does also work as a norepinephrine and serotonin reuptake inhibitor. So that is in part of the pain pathway that helps to decrease pain in the spinal cord. It's called descending inhibition. And as an example, if anybody's familiar with the drug duloxetine in human medicine, that's what that drug does. That's how it works. So tramadol does have that mechanism of action that can be helpful. So that's another thing to ask for. Sometimes we'll put lidocaine patches at the incision. So that's something that could be explored. And then again, asking about where can I go for acupuncture? Where can I go for laser? Where can I go for massage for my pet? So all of those physical modalities too. So that was a long story for if we have to replace any of those drugs, if they're missing, we don't have a lot of choices. We have to use more than one choice to replace one of those big potent drugs, but it can be done.
We're seeing this pain management concerns, not only in, practices overseas or other countries, but in certain clinics where maybe the vets have been practicing a long time or they're not up to speed on the most recent standards. So what type of, if someone has the liberty of time in selecting a surgeon or a hospital, what type of credentials or accreditations for the clinic should people be looking for, like ABMA or AHA clinics? What if someone has the time to select a surgeon, what should they be looking for in terms of pain management at that practice?
Question. And obviously any veterinarian can be really passionate about pain management. So any clinic could be really good. But if we're looking at ones that might have had more pain training, there's the Certified Veterinary Pain Practitioner Program, CVPP, through the International Veterinary Academy of Pain Management. So CVPP is a big one. If that clinic happens to have an anesthesiologist, we are trained in anesthesia and analgesia. So our credentials would be Diplomat D of ACVAA, American College of Veterinary Anesthesia and Analgesia. And AHA clinics, the American Animal Hospital Association, they have pain training in their requirements to be certified as an AHA clinic. And you mentioned fear-free. If people are fear-free certified, they're definitely active in pain management. And then you're right. Another one is ABVP, American Board of Veterinary Practitioners. They have pain management training and other specialties too. But those are probably the most pain focused groups as a real focus. But again, there's a lot of veterinarians out there that are great at pain management. And you're right, some that just haven't upped their knowledge in pain management yet.
Yeah, this is super helpful. All of the alphabet soup of accreditations. We will definitely put this in the podcast notes. Now, as a veterinarian, what is a phrase or how would you like the pet parent to ask you these questions? Because I know that it can be kind of annoying for somebody like me to say, well, I heard on the internet that we should, or Tripod said we should ask for this. And what's a respectable way to talk to your veterinarian about their pain management? Like, I don't know if we could role play or something, but I would just like to be able to talk to my veterinarian without insulting their knowledge, but yet probing a little bit to make sure that they're good with pain management. I hope that makes sense.
Does, and I think you should ask that. And honestly, we are taught to be proactive about our own health care, right? To ask questions. And so why wouldn't we ask questions? We're also taught to do that for family members. Why wouldn't we do that for the pet? So just asking it as that kind of question, and not a, well, don't you do this? Well, why don't you know, not a blaming, or, you know, that's maybe not the right word, but not antagonistic, but being proactive. We have to ask. And so just saying, I don't think a veterinarian or veterinary technician should be offended if you said, I really want to be proactive about my pet's health care. Can you describe your anesthesia and pain management protocol to me? Doesn't even have to be the anesthesia. We're talking about pain, but couldn't help that as an anesthetist.
Yeah.
And add in all the things we've just talked about. I'd really like to hear what you do before, during, and after surgery, and then what I can expect to be doing when I return home. Just ask it as a question. It's a valid question to be proactive. And then, you know, if you didn't hear quite what you wanted, so pretend you didn't hear local anesthetic block. I think that's, you should say, do you do any local anesthetic blocks? And if they say, because maybe they forgot to tell you, or maybe they've just started, and then you could say, oh, good, I want that for my pet. But if what you hear doesn't fit what you want for your pet, like, wow, this is just really not going to, you know, I don't know how to ask any more questions without being antagonistic, then, you know, as a veterinarian, I would say we all want you to be happy. Find the veterinarian that fits you. And again, like you said, if you have the luxury of time, if you don't, it can be really tough. But find that veterinarian that fits you, that's passionate about what you're passionate about. And pain management is a big part. And, you know, maybe you could ask a few, you know, oh, a friend of mine's dog had surgery and this is what happened, you know. But you're right.
Yeah.
I think with any profession, as soon as you say, I read it on the internet, okay, so Dr. Google's license is better than mine.
Yeah, we don't want to have that in the conversation. I mean, I can understand how insulting that could be.
Right. You know, it's just a tough way to start out. But you know, there was a place for it, though, because again, the veterinarian should be wanting you to be the advocate for their pet, for your pet. So, you know, at some point as you're listening, saying, I really tried to look things up, so I would have some knowledge about what you're explaining to me. So like you're deferring, right? Like I know you're the vets, but I tried to understand it. And I found some sites that said X was good, you know, whatever. So, you know, there's definitely a way to introduce it without being challenging, right?
Good word. I like that. Well, so let's say we found the vet who we feel good about. We, you know, their pain management seems like it's up to speed and it's somebody we want to work with. How do we know that our pet is comfortable once they're back in our hands? What is the best way to gauge their comfort level? Because in our experience with our community and our own pets, it's been like when they're on drugs, pain drugs, you don't know if they have too much or too little, and they can be really zonked out. And maybe that's a good thing, or maybe that's a bad thing. It's very hard for us to tell.
Right. And what we want to see returning fairly quickly are those normal behaviors? So your dog coming back and wanting to sit with you on the couch, or your cat playing with a little ball, bit at first, right? Just like, ooh, there's my ball, bat, bat, oop, that's enough, I'm not quite ready. But starting to see that return of the pet, the normal behavior. And you're right, that immediate, those first couple of days, they may be seeming a little too sedate. And part of that, if anybody that's been through surgery knows, it's just exhausting. So you're tired afterwards and you don't bounce back right away. So they may seem a little sedate or quiet. But you're right, if that continues, then maybe one of the drugs needs to be decreased, because we don't want them to stay sedate, because then they're not eating normally, they're not keeping themselves hydrated, right? We need them to go through all those normal functions of life. And pain is such an individual response that there's some trial and error in using these drugs in each patient. And then the response to the drugs is individual. So that's adding the trial and error. But I would say we just kind of normal tiredness, maybe taking more naps those first couple of days after surgery is normal. But between naps, you want an awake and alert pet, right? You want them to be more interactive with them the way they were before. So that's what you want to see, is kind of that slow return to the normal behavior. And if they're not returning within a couple of days, whether you're not seeing progress, definitely need a recheck, because either you're right, the pain meds aren't right, or maybe an infection is setting in or something different's going on, but something that would prompt a veterinary visit. So that slow return, and then I really recommend using quality of life scales to, not the first week or so, like we're just talking about post-surgery now, but then as they recover from that, starting quality of life scales so that you can see how they're doing long-term.
You mentioned recheck and normal, and it brings to mind a recent case where a member had a pretty rough recovery. And we often see this roller coaster of recovery, and within a few days, the dog's acting great, then they're not eating, then they're not walking, then they seem great again. And it seems like it might be troublesome to be constantly adjusting medication, you know, obviously with or without your vet's recommendations. We, of course, want to, you know, consult with the vet. But can you explain, like, how often pet medications should be adjusted, and should we allow time to evaluate whether that adjustment took place? In this particular case, it seemed as though they might have been, like, with the vet's direction, adjusting medication and then not giving it ample time to see the results before adjusting it again. So how do we ride this pain management roller coaster with our dogs and cats?
Yeah, you're right. There can definitely be too much adjustment. And I see a lot of that too. Or people that just stop giving the drugs. They don't think they're working. And then we see it all the time when a pet parent will bring a bottle of the drugs back in with time to remove the stitches and plunk it down on the counter and go, here, I'm going to return these. My pet didn't need them. I'm like,
Right.
Yes, they did. So really, really pushing that you have to stay the course. Again, this pet has had ongoing pain already and now has more pain on top of it. So we have to stay on top of that pain. And if they're, like we said, if they're a little bit groggy those first couple of days, as long as they're eating a little bit, drinking, okay. But then we want that to be dissipating by day three or four. But you're right, drugs take time to make a change. And in this group of drugs that we're talking about for recovery, the anti-inflammatory drugs are the ones we really need to have the pet taking. We need to control that inflammation. And they're once a day, pretty easy to do. Leave them on unless there's a side effect. Don't take them off of those unless, again, something bad is happening. The other drugs, like adding in the gabapentin or the amantadine, they're not as powerful. So we call them adjunctive drugs. They're helping the NSAID, and they're slower to take effect. So you just have to leave them on. Unless you overdose the pet with gabapentin and it was so sedate it couldn't get out of bed, leave it alone. Even if it's just mildly sedate, because you guys have probably seen this with your experience. If they very often develop a tolerance to that sedation with gabapentin. So if you leave it on for several days, then, you know, like by day 4 or 5, the gabapentin is helping and they're no longer sedate. So yes, really, unless there is something major as a side effect, leave the treatment on, leave it going. And also, again, include things like acupuncture that has a longer duration effect. And that helps decrease that roller coaster a little bit. So relying on some of the physical modalities and not just the drugs can also help smooth out that recovery. And unfortunately, it's just a tough time. We have to, again, stay the course, wait it out. They're going to get better. But they just had surgery pain on top of chronic pain. And so it's going to be tough for a little bit. And it's not unheard of. I have done it myself to, if we're really fighting the roller coaster, to rehospitalize the patient and do a drip of the pain drugs to really try to break that pain cycle. And that may be an option with your veterinarian, whichever veterinarian each person is talking to, that might be something that they consider is, sorry, I just need to hospitalize your dog or cat for a day or two. And we need to get this under control because we can't do drips at home. So doing them in the clinic is really the option. So that might happen. Another thing is, another question that you might ask a veterinarian that would help in this scenario is, one thing that is very exciting that we see in human medicine and now starting in veterinary medicine is longer duration drugs that are traditionally used for acute pain. So I keep talking about the local blocks. You must think I invented them. I get a royalty for local blocks, but they're so helpful for amputation pain. And now there is a local anesthetic block that lasts 72 hours. And so that's really going to cover a lot of that first pain. So you might ask the veterinarian if they use that drug. And in cats, there's an opioid, buprenorphine, that lasts for 4 days. So we can put it on in the hospital and not send the opioids home with the owners, right? That's already in the cat. So asking the veterinarians if they use some of those longer lasting drugs is also helpful because it does decrease the pain in this rocky part that we're talking about. Because the more robust we are with our pain control when we do the surgery, and then even before the surgery, then the more controllable the pain is probably going to be. I can't say 100% because it's an individual sensation. But yeah, getting your community to just going to have to ride this out a little bit. But conferring with your vet and asking, is there something more we could do, even if it's in the hospital, maybe a question in some of these patients that's very valid.
That's something that we have seen work in some really tough pain management cases. We have seen some members' animals go back in and have a drip to break that cycle. I'm thinking of a bulldog who had some horrific pain, and he was readmitted back to University of Pennsylvania's vet school, and they fixed it. They got it under control, and that dog went on to have a really good quality of life. But it's such a tough time for us, and I think it's because we're not used to seeing our pets hurting so much, and we're not used to seeing them on drugs. And even though we tell ourselves we might be prepared for this, we expect a lot from them in a very short period of time. And I think a lot of us expect more than we would from ourselves because we're just not used to it. And in our community, there's a common scenario that we see where an animal will come home, usually it's a dog, and they'll come home and they will be wonderful. They'll be moving around, they'll be eating and eliminating and just being a very normal dog for like the first 5 or 6 days. And then boom, there's a crash. And we see it all the time. And it seems like the body and the brain are just finally catching up to each other, saying, whoa, slow down. We're going to take things a little bit slower and try to recover here. In your experience, what is like the general time frame that we can expect this kind of roller coaster to slow down and just get life back to normal again? Does it depend on the age, breed, species?
Oh, great question. And, you have seen so much of it. You probably have a better idea just from your experience how long it should take. And, I can see when the pet goes home and the The drugs that were used for surgery, they're going to still, even though the drugs are gone, the pain itself, because of where the drug's working in that pain pathway or pain system, it's suppressed a little bit. And then they're feeling pretty good. And then all of a sudden those wear off, and probably some of them might have been a little too active. And then all of a sudden too, they've got these new sources of pain. So you can imagine, I guess we all know that, their weight has been equally distributed on four limbs, or it maybe not all distributed, because again, there was some pain and the reason the limb was amputated, but they still have some balance to their body. And now they have three legs, and now they're twisted, right? Their whole thorax and abdomen and hips are a little bit torqued, and they're trying to rebalance, and that's hard. And so they're trying to figure this out. And then as this is all happening, okay, twist yourself right now, you two. And what do you feel? You feel some muscle stretching that normally aren't. And now try to walk. You feel some muscles needing to be used that weren't used as much. And they develop these a lot of secondary sources of pain right at about that week, just from the change in balance. And so that's why I love, again, acupuncture and massage, because when start to palpate those pets, we often feel trigger points, right? Those horribly knotted muscles that are so painful because they're having to move and to stand in this whole different way, and their muscles are reacting to that. And that's what we usually think we're seeing at about that week, is this new source of pain. And the reason I'm saying that, I see it often enough. And sometimes those pets come back in with a comment from the pet parent saying, maybe we should just euthanize Doc because he's worse. And I go, wait a minute. I mean, that's always an option. That is ultimate pain relief. But let's touch your dog. Let's see what's going on here. Oh, see how he jumped when I palpated that muscle? So that's between the drugs wearing off and new sources of pain kicking in, I think you're right, like 5 to 7 days or so. And that's why, to starting, I know I keep bringing it up, but starting the rehab, the acupuncture, the massage, the leash walks, the whatever physical components you're going to do, that's why it really needs to start as soon as possible.
That's a great segue here because we've mentioned before surgery and we mentioned during recovery, and you mentioned the term acute pain. And before we get into kind of, ongoing care for pain that might go on with a dog with an adjusted gait, could you explain quickly the difference between acute and chronic pain for our listeners?
Absolutely. So acute pain is pain right now. So your surgical pain, you wake up from surgery and you are in acute pain. Chronic pain, of course, is that ongoing cancer pain, arthritis pain. And I'm glad you asked, because they're actually quite different. The acute pain from surgery is mostly pain from inflammation. So the anti-inflammatory drugs will help a lot. Chronic pain is it's called chronic. It lasts a long time, life probably for most of our pets or patients, right? But long duration, usually for life for most of these diseases. And that pain is not just acute pain of inflammation that lasts a really long time. Inflammation is a part of it, but what has made it chronic is some kind of change in that pain system, that pain pathway, something in the spinal cord, a new receptor opening, or irritation of a nerve. There's some other cause. It's not just the inflammation. And so chronic pain is actually what we call pathologic pain. Acute pain is physiologic. It's normal. We need that. It's survival, right? That if something is acutely painful, you move away from it, right? So you survive. Chronic pain, because it comes from other sources, as we just said, it's not all inflammation, it really isn't protective. So phantom limb pain is a phrase that we use a lot with the amputees, right? And pain from a leg that's not even there anymore. So that's obviously not physiologic. That's not normal. That's not protective. So chronic pain is also called maladaptive. It's not a normal adaptation of the pain pathway. So we're dealing with something that's very, very complex, whereas surgical pain, yeah, it can be awful, but it's a little more straightforward and easier to control. And now, like I said, in these patients, we've got the acute, the surgical inflammatory pain, cut nerves, on top of the chronic, what's going on in that spinal cord, what's going on in the peripheral nerves. So it's very complicated for those patients. So again, explains the roller coaster.
It's a quite a ride, and it doesn't always end even after the body is fully healed, as we discovered with our own tripods. And you mentioned phantom pain. So that is something that we see a lot of here. And I think now veterinarians definitely say, yeah, it's a thing. I know that when we first started tripods, it was still kind of a new concept for a lot of people. But we see cats who appear to show a lot of phantom pain signals, like jumping up from not a dead sleep and starting to walk backwards, like they're trying to get away from their pain, or dogs who will suddenly yip and start biting where the leg used to be. We see a whole variety of situations like that long after the surgery. So if a pet parent takes their animal in for a check, let's talk about this pain my dog or my cat is having, and the animal gets a mixture of treatments. So they get prescription gabapentin, they get acupuncture, they get the whole thing, but the medication becomes a part of their daily routine. I know that for us, our Wyatt was on a mixture of pain control medications as well as rehab therapy for basically the last 4 years of his life. He lived to be a nice old 12 for a German Shepherd, which was Yeah, it was great.
Amazing.
He was on drugs. He was on drugs. And a lot of people are very nervous about that. And I would love to get your thoughts about any potential long-term issues that may happen from leaving an animal on pain control medications for the long haul like that. A lot of people wonder, do they get withdrawals if we take them away? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, the side effects of pain meds are a lot less frequent than the side effects of pain. I'm going to explain. I just stopped for dramatic pause there, but
that is great.
Well, pain is causing side effects, and pain is a disease. Chronic pain is a disease. We treat the pain, right? We can't always cure whatever caused it. We don't always know. Like I said, it might be a change in the spinal cord or whatever. So pain is a disease. Let's treat the pain. We wouldn't leave another disease untreated, especially if it impacts a quality of life the way that pain does. But it is true. We want to use the safest medications that we can. And that's why for some of the medications, like the anti-inflammatory drugs, we as a veterinarian might ask you to come back in more often for blood work than you used to have to come in, just so we can be sure that the drug is still safe for your pet, and that it's still working. We want to talk to you too. There's a big fear with NSAIDs, leaving them on for life. And I hear it a lot, just like you guys hear it in your community. Or the other one I hear a lot is, I don't want to start him on drugs now. He's so young. We're not treating age, we're treating pain. So we start when pain starts. But like the anti-inflammatory drugs, if they are going to cause a side effect, it usually happens in the first 2 weeks. And in fact, there's no evidence that the longer they're on it, the more likely they are to have a side effect. It's they either have a side effect to the drug or they don't. Okay, it's not that black and white, but there's not that many shades of gray. So leaving them on for life, if they need it, no problem, as long as, yes, we're checking. And then if that one is causing a side effect, okay, we go on to the next treatment. And as you guys know, you've been through it enough. Sometimes it's a little bit of trial and error to find the one that works and is safe in that pet. But I'm really more worried about what pain is doing to that pet than what the drugs are doing to that pet. With reason, of course, again, with checking, with medical checkups.
That's really important. You had a gold nugget of wisdom there about the side effects of the pain medication versus the side effects of the pain itself. And I always have a hard time conveying to pet parents, like, how to identify pain signals versus side effects of pain. Do you have any tips for someone to identify what may be a side effect or it might be a pain signal so they can determine whether or not it is the medication? Or is that just totally dependent on the prescriptions going on?
Some of all of that definitely depends a bit on the prescriptions, especially if it's a drug like gabapentin that can cause some sedation, right? We know that we might see behavior change, we might see sedation. a drug like an NSAID, where the side effect would, the most common side effect is GI upset, so vomiting. Okay, I gave an NSAID, they vomited. I can say that's probably the drug. But then, just again, with the signs of pain, we're still looking for those changes in behavior. So again, with a sedating drug, that can be harder. But with NSAIDs, the appropriate dose of gabapentin with physical medicine, any change in behavior could be pain. And I don't know if I'm quite answering your question, but clarify for me if I'm not.
No, I think you did. It was just, it's just challenging, and it is on a case by case basis to determine whether or not the dog is experiencing pain signals or side effects of pain. And you mentioned gabapentin, one of them being lethargy, that does answer that.
But, our Wyatt, like you said, there's a tolerance that they build up to the side effects. So I think a lot of people just, we get impatient. We want it to work quickly. We don't want the side effects. But I know that over time, Wyatt was no longer affected by the drowsiness that it can cause. And same thing with amantadine. We just learned how to time it differently so that if he did get sleepy from it, we'd give it to him at night and that kind of thing. So you just kind of have to work out a really tailored program along with your vet to help your pets experience relief. Because like you said, it's pain is a disease. And for tripods, unfortunately, they tend to be more at risk of ongoing chronic pain than a four-legged dog would. And that's just something to be really mindful of as we go through life together. Even a dog who doesn't have cancer can be subject to all of these side effects of this disease called pain. Dr. Grubb, we are just thrilled to have you here with all of this wonderful information. This is going to be so helpful for people. We're running out of time. We're going to go over a whole lot of other stuff, but I think our head's about to explode with knowledge right now, and it's all good. But is there anything you'd like to add for our community?
Yeah, and thank you for having me again. I can obviously talk on this like for weeks and weeks and weeks. We'll have to talk again about this at some point.
Definitely.
I just want to reiterate. I know I've said it a couple of times, but just reiterate with the tripod. And again, I've been through it with you too. Really assess your pet's quality of life, not just the tripods, any pet. And it can be something just as simple as saying, is today a smiley face day, a frowny face day, or a straight smile face, right? Like, I don't know what to call that one in the middle. There's a smile, a frown, and in the middle is just flat lips.
Neutral.
Neutral, thank you. Because you know your pet, and you can tell. And there's there's also something to add called a client-specific outcome measurement, a CSOM. And it's something we use even in research where I say to you, what does your dog do that would tell you he's not in pain or he's having a good day? And maybe you'd say, well, he'd go get his ball, even if it's just once, right? He'll have the ball. Because each pet is different. So what is it in their life that they do that makes you feel like they're not in pain, they're having a good day? And then put it on your calendar. And as they progress, as they getting better and getting worse, because that's how life is, I start doing it every day in those pets. And on my calendar, as long as there's mostly smiley face days, then great. We keep going. If we start seeing a lot of neutral faces, start thinking about maybe their pain is too much for them. And it's about them. It's not about us. We have to say goodbye sometime. It's about not letting them be in pain. And then if we start getting in frowny faces, that's when I usually ask the question, who are we doing this for? We've tried everything we can to get them out of pain. And now, is this for the pet or for us? Because we have the blessing to relieve their pain. And that's, to me, what every pet deserves. In the end, when we've done it, when we are out of options, not right now, we're still in our early stages in this conversation, but if we're out of option, it's about the pet.
Always.
It sounds like it's important to stick to that schedule, follow your vet's recommendations, and possibly keep a journal to identify the pain management on a day-to-day basis. And that's why we encourage people to start their Tripods blogs to share their story and also document their own progress. So we're definitely going to recommend that, as well as provide links to all of these things that you mentioned. And again, Ken, thank you enough for your time.
Thanks back for having me. I really do obviously like to talk about pain management, and I do love those tripods.
Proper pain management is a must for all tripods before, during, and after recovery from surgery. We can't thank Dr. Grubb enough for sharing her insight on how to identify pain in your pet and how to talk with your vet about the best treatment. Learn more about Dr. Grubb's work in veterinary anesthesia, analgesia, and continuing education at vetaace.com. And find many more related articles and interviews at tripods.com/tag/pain-management.
He's a three-legged dog and he's still pretty good.
Thank you for tuning in. Subscribe to Tripod Talk Radio for more pet amputation tips from experts and claim your free gift just for listeners at downloads.tripods.com/podcast. Tripod.